Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more. Childcare Bar and Grill podcast. Jeff Johnson live from upstairs studio with Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
And Sam Balch.
Howdy.
Sam, every time I say your name, I feel like I'm going to say Belch by accident.
That happens, actually. People do call me that.
Sam Belch. And
some people also say Blatch. They just like change the letters around.
Were you ever a party girl to the extent that you were drinking and belching a lot and that became a nickname?
No, I would just drink and then fall asleep at like 9:30.
Well, that's the best way to drink.
That's the best way.
It's like, okay, better than go bed now.
Better than going out and punching a horse or something like that, you know?
Is that a personal experience?
Can't discuss it. So got a topic, went into the podcast topic vault earlier today. Well, I didn't go in. I was a little bit busy. I said Kenny, our podcast assistant, into the vault to look at the topic list, and Kenny came back with a card note idea for an episode idea submitted by Lisa Murphy about making change in programs, and the idea is the smallest possible thing.
Oh, you're right. I don't remember that, but I kind of still remember the spirit of it. What is the absolute smallest little thing you can do that's going to start leading to change? Depending on the handwriting or if there's a date on it.
No, it's my handwriting. It's just...
Oh, I thought it was...
I've got the note Lisa idea.
Well, I think it might have been, and who knows, I could be wrong. We've been recording now for however many years, but I remember for a while we were having like themes to our years, and we had advocacy through action, you know, nothing without joy, and the advocacy through action came about because I had realized that the year prior, I was so overly focused on making the right bit of change that led to the biggest amount of change that I realized I had ended up doing nothing. And so my goal for, not nothing, but you know what I mean. Like, yeah. You know, I was waiting for like, ooh, the domino effect. If the entry point is here, 99 things are gonna get better. Ooh, but if I only enter here, maybe only two will get better. And from that, I think came conversation and dialogue and reflection on pick a spot. Pick one thing and just start. Bev used to say, start in a corner. Find the corner that you can start tweaking and start there. And I'm guessing, unless you have notes that indicate otherwise, Jeff, I'm guessing that's kind of the spirit of that. That it doesn't need to be, go back on Monday and rearrange your classroom and rearrange your playroom in your family childcare. Do not throw every bit of plastic little tykes crap you might have in your yard in the dumpster and think you have to refill everything with loose, you know, like found loose parts, junky stuff by Tuesday morning, because it's overwhelming and then nothing gets done.
But yeah, based on the date, that's exactly what I remembered from this. Based on the date, I believe this was the last time we ran into each other at O'Hare, and
oh, there was definitely whiskey. So yeah.
That was definitely whiskey in induced.
Go to O'Hare more.
So for me, it's the idea of baby steps and change, right? Because a lot of times, like you're saying, we decide we're going to jump into things, and we jump way too far in and end up struggling. And we
scare ourselves. It's kind of like what I was saying in the last episode about, you know, we're wanting somebody to see the big deep end, the bigger picture, what is possible, and then we scare them into absolutely like freezing like a rabbit, and they do nothing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and it's a good way to set yourself up to fail. It really is. And so picking that smallest thing, I mean, for me this year, it has been, and I've talked about this in other episodes fairly recently, but it's been, I needed to make myself start working out. Right. And so at the beginning of this year, the plan was the smallest possible thing was to walk into the home gym every day and spend a couple minutes in there just to be in the room. That was the goal I set for myself. And I did that. Consistently every day. And then it grew. It got to be more time and more time. And then, you know, I lost about 6 weeks there because of the whole COVID thing, but then I got back on track. And this month, because I've got an app I use to track stuff, this month it'll be over 34 hours or something plus that I've spent working out this month and lifted just about 250,000 pounds.
Woo!
And it's not a lot compared to somebody that is big and muscly, but I've added pounds of muscle this year because of this thing that started out as the smallest possible thing, because I had, it's about building a history of success at a thing. And that, I mean, that's the only way that in my experience, I've been able to get any kind of longevity out of change, because you almost sneak up on it. You almost sneak up on the change. I think when you throw yourself into it too deeply at the beginning, you get overwhelmed and you struggle and you struggle your way back to shore and then you give up because, oh,
yeah.
I knew that was gonna work.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, such a well-known phenomenon is this idea of acclimating to a big change you're doing. If you're just going to start one day and say, I'm going to run 3 miles, you're probably going to hate running at the end of it because you haven't found any enjoyment in it. You haven't allowed yourself that time to get used to it and to get into a mindset of it. And that's kind of what's coming up for me. Even before you pick a corner to start with, I would say like pick just part of your day to sit with. What are you reading? What information are you taking in and from where, and how is that influencing what you do? What kind of information do you want to be taking in? Because if you're in a program that's, you know, very thematic, very rigid, you've got a boxed curriculum you use, if that's the only information you're getting and now you say, but I want to change, you're going to need more sources. You're going to need more information just to know. So you don't have to do everything now, but pick maybe one, I don't know, podcast or one blog that you really like, or one book that somebody published that you want to read and just sit with it for a little bit and come to some understanding of what you're thinking, what you're feeling, where you want to be, and how these things are matching up. And then you're going to have such a solid foundation for when you are in the classroom, in the corner, or going through toys, or looking at your curriculum map for the year.
Lisa Murphy, thoughts?
Well, so I have a couple. So I'm thinking Venn diagram, and I'm thinking Jenny Chapman's cycle of change. And I'm also thinking about what we talked about in the last episode. So I guess three things about you have to be able to articulate, and you might not be able to articulate what you think you believe in until, like, maybe you didn't realize that the thoughts, the secret thoughts you had in your head that weren't, how do I say, they weren't reinforced in your day-to-day job, but maybe you had these random thoughts, but then you read this article, you're like, oh my God, there's other people who think that. Okay, awesome. So I'm gonna read that article again. Maybe I'm now starting to formulate more of a personal philosophical position statement. Awesome. That takes a lot of time. But then where can I find just another way of saying that corner starting spot? Where's the Venn diagram? what part of this new way of thinking can I say yes to in this particular environment? Where's that little nugget that I can start plopping in? And I will say, and this might be more at Lisa Murphy specific, is you don't need to make an announcement. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, and sometimes this gets taken out of, like, it's not that it's a secret, right? I'm not doing anything that needs to be considered like secretive. I've also learned after 30 some odd years that if you make this grand announcement, that some, like the person, the adult, the grown up that you haven't interacted with in 10 years marches her way into your office. Like, just do it. And then see what happens. See what's on the other side of that.
Yeah. I kind of like that grand announcement once in a while, just as something that will hold my feet to the fire.
True. But I'm just saying like, okay, so to this example, okay, and it's specific and it actually happened.
Uh-huh.
If you've never, ever done yoga, tai chi, qigong, and you went and took a great workshop and you're like, oh my God, this so connects with not only me, but with my children. You don't need to make an announcement that you are now offering yeah. some kind of a thing. You're just going to plop it into the space.
Yeah. Yeah.
I get what you're saying 100% about the accountability, about like folding my feet to the fire. You know, I get that. Because with your consistency buddies, as you mentioned the other time with a song even, that's good. But I'm thinking more programmatically.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, not only the smallest possible thing, but also I think there needs to be some reflection on the smallest possible thing that's going to get you to the next thing. Because in some cases, the smallest possible thing might be not be the thing that leads you forward beyond that.
True.
I got an example because the other thing I decided I was going to do this summer was teach myself to swim. Because I thought maybe this will be a fun thing to do. And I looked at why I got to be 51 years old and didn't know how to swim. And it wasn't a mechanical thing. I think moving my body through water isn't something that bothered me or I fretted with. It was the feeling of water in my nasal passages. It was just icky. And so I spent the first part of the summer, Tasha and I would go to the pool and she would swim her laps and I would sit over in the corner of the pool getting water in my nose and gasping, pff, 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 looking like a wet cat and then getting used to it and then getting a little bit more used to it and then getting a little bit more used to it until I was like, oh, okay, I'm not going to die apparently from this little tiny bit of water.
Did Tasha slap water on you on purpose to practice harder?
No, she's a much nicer human being than I am. She just let me play in the corner by myself. And so what I was essentially doing was pretending to drown myself a little tiny bit. And in my head, I knew that the amount of water that was in my left nostril was like a one little eyedropper drop. But I'm like, at first. But then I got myself used to it. Basically it's conditioning. And then once that was done, then I started messing with the mechanics of the arms and the legs. And first it was getting halfway across the width of the pool and then the width of the pool. And next summer I'll be able to pick off where I left off, but it's those little things.
And now Jeff knows how to swim.
And so I won't die if I have to swim more than if it's 10 feet or less, I won't die. But if I would have picked, if the first thing I started at, the point is that if I would have started with the
diving in or diving in the deep end.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because, and actually that was one of my happiest days of the summer. Once I got the whole nose thing worked out, I was able to jump in and that was a big, fun, splashy thing to do. And something I haven't really done because the whole nose thing. And so that was the payoff. But if you pick the wrong thing to start with, you can kind of hobble your efforts before they really get moving, I think.
So I want to add to that because I don't want us to sound like we're contradicting each other. I think if you're ready to take more than your initial baby step, by all means, you don't have to hover in that initial stage just for the sake of hovering in that initial stage. Also, I think there's room in saying, okay, I still want to explore this, but the jump I took was too much or not enough or was in the wrong corner of the room, but I'm still ready to go, right? So I think that intention behind the thinking, the changing, the modifying is still going to guide you to where you need to start best. So you don't beat yourself up because you might have started, I hate what I'm about to say, in the wrong spot. You're like, okay, I'm ready. My mindset is locked and loaded on making some changes in my practice or in whatever, but I picked the wrong starting spot, but let's try again. Let's make another one.
Yeah. Instead of giving up. Yeah. Yeah.
I have two thoughts about this. The first is that it sounds a lot like we're describing the zone of proximal development.
Oh, 100%.
Very exciting. So remember, that doesn't just apply to children and academics. And then the second thing I'm thinking about is how often we do that with children, how often we expect children to just jump into the deep end when they might be uncomfortable getting a droplet of water in their nose. And Tommy might need the whole summer in the corner of the pool to get used to having water in his nose. And or Bill Jeffy might be totally ready to go into the deep end, like on day two.
Yeah.
And both of those things are great and wonderful. And you have to start small for each of those children, wherever they're at, in the same way we do with ourselves and the changes we make. If we're not going to rush children to some preconceived point, why are we trying to rush ourselves there? And if we are trying to rush children to some preconceived points, why are we doing that?
Because it's a race. Got to win childhood. No?
Yeah, I got the ribbons already ready to go.
So, I mean, Lisa, what you get to start running again recently, right?
Yeah.
And so was the first run.
Well, no, see, it's tricky because this is a different way. Like I don't write the way that in my brain, I think other people write. Usually I end up with an article that I think there's more to explore. So I kind of already have the legs to it. I know you're making a face at me that nobody else who's listening can see, but I don't get up every day and do that. Like, I'm a writer. I'm going to write from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Like, that's not my MO. I like explore a piece of it, plop it in, and then at some point cut and paste it to death and then give birth to a book.
The reason I was making the face is because I said you started running again.
Oh, I thought you said writing.
Yeah, that's why I made the face. I said running again, and you started talking about writing, and then I made the face.
I thought there was some reason that Lisa was ignoring the running part, and I was like, it's fine. She's talking about what she's comfortable with.
No, I was like, ooh, why is he having me go down the writing path? We haven't really talked about that yet. Yes, running. I have started running this more lately because the frickin' wart finally is cleaned up. But yeah, and I couldn't do that. Well, and I mean, I've done a lot of stuff. I joined Noom. I've been Nooming. I am not gentle with my own self.
What is a Noom? What is a Noom?
Noom is one of it's like Weight Watchers.
It's like, yeah, they're calling it Weight Watchers for millennials, which I'm not, obviously. But clearly I saw the ad often enough and I finally just said, screw it. Let's just see what happens. And so I did. I've been doing Noom, and I, you know, it doesn't matter the ins and outs of Noom, but it is that slow seeing progress in areas that aren't necessarily seeing a number go down on the scale, but those pants fit again. And oh, look, I can walk again. And so for me, with COVID, I have usually a very really basic relationship with food. I like to cook food and feed other people. I typically, though, would use food just for fuel. I like to eat, but it was I didn't have any real snacking issues. I didn't have like late at night lots of eating issues. And I realized that with COVID, not that anybody cares, but I'll tell you, I had developed some eating habits that have never, ever, ever, ever been a part of my life before. So what I figured was that while the wart on my foot, which allowed me to, or which made me not be able to move at all since March, while that was getting treated, I would get kind of my eating back under control, so to speak, so that when I was finally ready to go, I would be in a more better place to jump in, right? But it's taken since March for me to be I'm ready to jump in the deep end now, but I had to be very I'm a lot more gentle with other people than I am with my own self.
Do you feel like taking these incremental steps has made it more sustainable? Like you don't feel like you're going to burn
100%,
out?
100%. Like before, my MO would be like, oh shit, you didn't log your food today. Oh shoot, day two, you didn't log food. Now, meanwhile, I can list for you the 99 reasons that I didn't get to logging my food that day. But by day three previously, I'd been like, screw this shit. I didn't even bother logging it. That's it. Let's go eat a pizza and drink 3 bottles of wine. Boom. You know, and now I'm like, you know what? You just had 2 days of not logging your food. You know what? It's going to be okay. You don't have to go back. You don't need to make up. You just start again right now.
And that's what the research on habit change seems to indicate, is mm-hmm. that in those moments where we fall off whatever path we're on and want to give up, those are the moments where we need to take a breath and forgive ourselves and start over again, because so many people hit those moments and that becomes the wall, the roadblock that drives them off course and makes them give
100%.
Up. It's like the people that join gyms at the beginning of the year and then they miss the day in mid-January and then they never go back.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you're in the classroom, if you've started to implement a system or implement some kind of material and then it gets really messy one day, or it's really hard one day, or nobody seems interested in it, then I've seen people just completely abandon it after that one time. And it might not be a case of it doesn't work for your classroom. It might be a case of it didn't work today. It might be a case of let's sit with how we implemented it and come back to it in a minute.
Go ahead.
It won't necessarily be easy the whole time. And like with all kinds of learning, that disequilibrium is where the learning happens. That's where your brain forms the connection.
Yeah, 100%. Like, so there have been some behavior changes that, you know, I know what I need to do to lose weight. I do. I mean, I'm not stupid. And it's been interesting that it has taken a couple of, like, not reboots. Like, it's not restarting. It's just like, I didn't log for 2 days, get over it, just start again today. But I've actually found that some of the long-term behavior changes are just now finally able to kick in. And I 100% attribute that to just sticking with it and not beating myself up.
You're literally rewiring your brain when you're changing those habits. And so you gotta take into account that rewiring takes time. And so there's that learning curve of training yourself new habits. And then you start thinking about implementing a change in an early learning setting when there's more things that are getting rewired than your own little human brain. You're rewiring the practices of a dozen or more people. It can be a real complicated thing. And so I think a lot of times, even if you're taking that smallest possible step, you get overwhelmed by the frustrations that are just part of the process and give up. So being able to pull back and accept that those frustrations, those setbacks are going to be a piece of it and are to be expected, knowing that those are predictable things to expect when you're beginning that smallest possible thing is going to lead you to a little bit more likelihood of success.
Absolutely. And the setbacks of the smallest possible thing are going to be a lot more manageable than the setbacks of if you change everything all at once, because then you're going to have 20 different fires you need to put out as opposed to one fire that's very small that you can contain.
Very well said. That's my 10-day rule. I don't want you doing anything new or different for 10 days. And then the one new thing that you are going to implement is the only thing that you implement. And for listeners who are new, just so you know, that could be an attitude adjustment. It doesn't mean you rearrange the room. It doesn't mean that the easel is now pulled out of storage and nobody's seen it for a month and a half. It could be just your eyeballs and how you're seeing the day pan out could be the new thing that you sit with for 10 days before changing anything new.
Yep. Any other thoughts on this one before we pull the plug? This
is hard and it's necessary.
Hard you and necessary. That's what she said. This is for the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. I can't help myself. I'm a 12 year old Sam. I'm so sorry.
This no, that was Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. It was built for it.
Thanks for listening. Back soon with another episode. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production. Oh.